If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we are talking about deconstructing jealousy, taking a look at the main factors that can trigger jealousy and the best ways to handle them.
It's so, like we never left.
No, I was going to say, so it may seem to our regular listeners that like jealousy, that's an easy topic. Like, haven't you covered that before? And like, I just want to ask you to please have some compassion for us because we have not sat in the same room without a live audience and podcasted in like over a month now. And
yeah, that's a
it feels really weird.
Time.
Yeah,
it feels really odd.
It is funny being back in the studio.
Now, should I pull a diva act? Like, unless there's an audience, I can't do this.
No, that's
get
bullshit.
The cats in here, get somebody in
oh
here.
Oh my god, I need like that emotional support
exactly,
and that laughter.
Exactly, I need the energy.
I need the laughter.
Maybe, no, that's true. Like, maybe it's I got so used to getting all that energy from the audience that now when I'm expected to produce it on my own, I'm like, what?
What?
What is this?
It's okay, we have to get it from within, guys.
Right.
This is an important task that we need to happen.
Okay, but what if we started recording the podcast with a laugh track?
No.
Oh, God.
We're not going to do that. Have we sunk so low?
I,
we are now like comedy hour.
I know. Now we're like daytime sitcom style.
Well, nighttime, but yes.
Yeah.
Nighttime
sitcom. Half hour comedy.
Primetime sitcoms.
Yeah.
The laugh track. Yeah.
I suppose so. What if we got like a goat track? Or just a bunch of bleeding goats.
Okay.
Sorry, that came into my head and it doesn't make any sense,
right.
But
oh, man.
It made me laugh.
Oh, boy. I hope
okay,
we edit that
so
out
jealousy.
Before the final episode.
So what right. is jealousy?
What is jealousy? All right, so something that I did want to clarify before we get into this episode is that there are a lot of people... Like, okay, first of all, jealousy is a topic that gets talked about and asked all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're first telling people about polyamory, when they first start looking into it, that's like always the number one question, right?
But what about jealousy? Don't you get jealous?
Mm-hmm.
Right. How do you handle jealousy? Like, wouldn't jealousy just make that awful?
How do you fight off gel-based life forms? Sorry, I'm
really,
really coming
just,
from left field today.
This is bad.
I'm a little
real,
sorry.
These
I'm
are
a little
some bad goose.
I'm a little bit ill,
Griffin's
and my
goofers.
My brain's a little fuzzy. Sorry, keep going. I'll just sit this one out.
Okay.
No.
So it's a topic that is asked a lot, and one of the ways that people try to tackle it is by making this distinction between envy and jealousy. And something I wanted to clarify there is that. Yes, those are two different terms, but I actually find that making this distinction between them can actually be less helpful because when you actually look at the dictionary definitions of them, there's some overlap. And basically, it's the distinction between envy and jealousy. That envy means that somebody else has something that you want. And so it's this, you know, negative, envious feeling of, I want to get that thing that they have.
And that you're specifically going to take it from the other person?
Right, that there's this desire to take this from the other person. That's kind of a secondary part of it. I think envy doesn't necessarily have to have that second part, but it often
does.
Is implied that
it often
I want
will,
to take
yeah.
that from them.
Yeah.
Whereas the definition of jealousy has two different definitions.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is that same thing. Of, you know, being jealous of something someone else has and wanting to take it for yourself. But then the second part of the definition is being afraid that someone is going to take something from you, which is often when people are talking about jealousy in terms of polyamory or in terms of their relationships, they're usually using that second definition.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people try to make this distinction that jealousy is that, like the fear of losing something, and that envy is wanting something from someone else. And it's just that the actual definition doesn't support that distinction. So for the purposes of this episode, it kind of covers both of those things.
Yeah.
But anyway, just so you know, we're not going to be making that distinction between those two terms in this episode.
Well, Yes.
And just to remind people that this is a very universal human emotion. Yes. You know, that crops up not just in sexual situations, not just in romantic situations, but we experience envy and jealousy in all arenas of life. We get jealous of coworkers, of friends, of family members, of siblings. You know, we experience jealousy in so many different arenas. And specifically in the arena of romantic and sexual jealousy, that's the one that seems to scare people the most.
Right. That we're all kind of taught as like healthy, mature adults when you're jealous of a friend or a coworker because of whatever, because they got a new job, because they have a sweet new car, you know, because they got married, like whatever it is, we're kind of taught that, oh, as a healthy person, you don't let that destroy your relationship with them. Right?
Yeah.
that it doesn't drive you insane. You just, as an adult, you handle that and you deal with it and maybe let it inspire you to get those things yourself.
Yeah. But it's a motivating factor, potentially.
Yeah. But we kind of have this understanding that jealousy is manageable in those situations.
Well, while we're on the subject of it being a universal emotion, what are some personal triggers for jealousy for us? Like, for instance, for me, I think... Yeah, the possibility. Sometimes I get jealous of the idea that, like, my partner may have a better sexual experience with someone else rather than me.
Sure.
That's a scary thing sometimes, and that's a trigger.
That's a really common one also.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, the term that I've heard for that, too, is FOMO.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys have come across this. Fear of missing out.
FOMO. Yeah.
And it's kind of that. It doesn't like quite fit the definitions exactly, but it kind of falls into this same thing of I'm worried that they're going to have some great time without me.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I'm missing out on something.
Sure. And that I'm therefore like they're going to maybe want to be with that person more because they're giving them a sexual experience that is not as good or that's better than something I could give them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
I know what's triggered jealousy for me is if I feel like another person is quote-unquote kind of encroaching on the things that make up my own identity. So to give an example of that, it's actually when one of my partners first started dating Emily that I got really jealous because after I learned that she was also really nerdy and really into video games.
Legend of Zelda!
And I was like, wait, but that's my thing. You know, and so things like that, which are so silly, but for some reason it's like I get triggered if I feel like my uniqueness is kind of competing against somebody else's.
Sure, yeah. I mean, a trigger for me today in terms of the like more envy side of jealousy is that Emily was showing off her new Nintendo Switch.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
With the new Zelda game, and I'm very envious of that.
As you should be.
Yeah.
As you should be.
Yeah.
No, I mean, for me, it's that kind of jealousy trigger has kind of changed and evolved over time. Like for me, for a while, it was really focused around money. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced this seems to really resonate with a lot of men, especially.
Yeah. I want to go into that later.
Yeah. Totally. That this idea that, you know, if somebody else makes more money than me, that they're inherently more desirable than me or more confident than me or just kind of better than me. So my partner would rather spend their time with that person instead of me.
Yeah,
but I've totally had that myself, even as a woman.
Sure.
If my partner's dating someone that I perceive is better off than me, that brings up the same levels of insecurity, probably a different shade from what men experience because we're so used to men being socialized to be the breadwinners and the supporters and the providers.
Even now, which is hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. But so for me, it's been less of feeling like that territory is being encroached on more and just this person's just better than me or just more successful than me. That triggers that.
Yeah.
But I do want us to think about, like, as we're going through the different catalysts and triggers for jealousy, is it something that's inherently male or inherently female?
Yeah.
I know that, when we discussed this before, we kind of found similarities and differences in both genders for the specific things in which we'll be talking about. But I guess I kind of want to, like, go back through them and say, like, hey, is this a more inherently male or a more inherently female thing?
Well, and I would just want to clarify.
Sure.
Using the word inherently, always
socially triggered or socially taught or like
socialized.
There
is this debate of like how inherent are these male and female differences,
that
or
is
it
the question.
All socialization? I tend to fall a lot more on the all socialization
side. I agree with you. Yeah.
Than some people. Mm-hmm. Just kind of depends. But regardless, those distinctions between males and females do exist.
Yes.
Whether or not they're inherent or just cultural, we do still have those as part of our lives as people living in Western culture.
And I wonder if the lines are blurred now more as like time goes on and as like women's liberation or whatever continues to occur, if like the lines become more blurred. I don't know. So let's talk about it.
So this episode we're specifically kind of breaking down triggers for jealousy into four broad categories. And in these four categories, there is a lot of overlap. A lot of them are connected to each other. But I found that in being able to kind of categorize and figure out kind of what exactly is the dynamic that's triggering my jealousy, it helps to kind of unlock like, well, what's going to be the key to making it feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
So what's our first one?
Okay, the first one is going to be comparison. And when I look at this, I see it as an inherently female thing, and it not necessarily, it's a social female thing for a female to be like, fuck, like that bitch is, and not necessarily, of course, like men compare as well, but it's challenging sometimes because women will look at other women and say, and use slut shaming or use a bunch of different tactics, I guess, to sort of put women down. Yeah. So comparison. Comparing your own worst qualities or weaknesses to someone else's best qualities or strengths.
I think that's sort of the key there.
Yes.
Is that you're not comparing like your best qualities to their like medium qualities. It's always like, look, they're good at this thing that I'm insecure about being bad at.
Totally.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So that hurts a lot more. That's a lot harder to deal with.
Yeah.
I was actually reading, you know, since we did this write-up for this episode, actually, was reading about some studies about social media and showing a link between how much time people spend on social media and how much depression they feel.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
And the sort of, you know, the possible cause for that is that you're constantly being exposed to everyone's best self that they're putting out there. And so when you're comparing yourself to that,
you're like,
you're coming up short.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, well, shit, I'm not good enough. I'm not successful enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not doing enough exciting things, like whatever it is.
Yeah.
Interestingly, as a fun side note, Snapchat, however, was shown to increase the happiness of people who used it, as opposed to Facebook, which makes people more depressed.
Maybe that's why Snapchat's IPO just went way up.
Is the idea with Snapchat that you can be less contrived with it and
I think
less orchestrated with it, or at least a little bit less,
because
it forces you to be very in the moment.
Well, and it's pretty raw in comparison. Exactly. Like, Facebook is very shiny, and Snapchat tends to be, like, very gritty in comparison, except for when you're using the filters,
you can still be very selective in when you're going to show someone something on Snapchat. Like,
sure.
You still can kind of cherry pick and show just the cool things that you're doing.
I don't know the causes of it, but I did think that was a fun little thing about the different ways that we can engage on social media and how they can affect us differently.
Okay, so when you're in a relationship, what are some of the ways in which the bad ways that you may try to combat this jealousy that's coming up within you for comparison specifically?
Yeah, I mean, definitely if you find yourself struggling with comparing yourself to other people or comparing yourself to your partner's other partners, there can definitely be a temptation to try to control who your partner can date.
Yeah.
Obviously, the idea being that, you know, well, as long as my partner doesn't date someone who's threatening to me, then there's no problem.
Or setting up a situation like a veto that's like, yes, it's letting me control who they can date, or even something, you know, that partners will set up of like a screening process. If you want to date someone, I have to like interview them or talk to them first and give you the okay.
Or even
it's this idea of like saying, well, I don't have to worry, or thinking that you won't have to worry as much about comparing yourself to them mm-hmm. if you are given power over them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or the idea that, like, even that's potentially a little more subconscious than all that, but, like, having an emotional breakdown before a partner goes on a date and being right. like, I need you now, like, yeah. every single time they go out with someone that you are jealous of.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah, someone that you compare yourself to.
Exactly.
But what about, like, what are healthier ways to manage this in a relationship?
Right. I mean, it seems almost too easy to say it, but actually, honestly and clearly communicating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? It's communicating about what is the reassurance that I need from my partner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think this can also help if you understand that your partner is going through this kind of comparison-based jealousy, to really go out of your way to let them know the things that make them special that are unique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
we talked about that in Valentine's Day. It's very important.
Yeah. Yeah. But so the key is not to be like, oh, well, this other person, they're not really that great. Or like, it's not about that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not about trying to downplay the other person.
Because then it just seems like, oh, you're hiding it from me because they're amazing and you're going to leave me for them.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But instead, really focusing on what is it, like, what are those awesome points about your partner?
Yeah.
And I think that that can also be something you can ask for.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and obviously, just to be clear, it can be very scary to actually go to your partner and say,
yeah.
you know what, your other partner, like, seems like he's really rich. And
is he really rich? Well, because he seems like he is.
Well, I mean, but maybe he actually is. Because he's like, you know what? I actually feel really insecure because your partner is, like, really rich and he can afford to take you out all the time and I can't. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm really struggling with that. And that is a huge thing to be able to do that takes a lot of courage. But that's probably, I think, the fastest way to actually getting reassurance from your partner.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
And meet your metamour.
Yes.
Meet that rich guy. He's just a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing, is actually meeting this person in the flesh can really help to dissuade you from only being able to see their good sides or imagine their good sides. Like, you actually get to see them as a living, breathing human being. And it doesn't necessarily mean that when you meet them, you're going to see all these flaws.
Sure.
You know?
Right. Let's be clear on that.
But you'll still see them as, like, a real human being.
Exactly. But you'll see them as normal.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Right. Not this, like, rich three-headed dragon.
Right. That it helps humanize them a little bit. And
yeah.
I found, for me at least, meeting someone in person as opposed to just seeing pictures of them, especially just seeing pictures of them with my with one of my partners looking happy and impressive and fit on Facebook and going to amazing exotic locations, that actually meeting them in person makes it, I know this sounds like super woo-woo here, but it, like, makes it easier to love them in whatever way that is, right? But it makes it easier to go, yeah, like, cool, like, I want this person to be happy because they're actually a person I've met in real life.
Yeah.
Like, they're someone that I... It isn't
they're
just
a real
an
boy.
Idea. They're a real...
They're a real boy.
They're a real boy.
Yeah.
All right,
okay,
what's the next,
on next
one? This is a
next?
Male-oriented one, in my opinion.
Well, yeah. So, this one is competition. And I think that competition and comparison can get, you know, easily mixed up with each other.
Yeah. But they're not quite the same thing.
Right. So the idea is that this one is based around the idea that there are a limited amount of resources out there, whether that is, you know, whether that is in the bigger picture of the world, like money or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But more specifically, this tends to come up with, like, the amount of time or the amount of affection that your partner has or the amount of attention or something like that. That it's based around this idea that I'm jealous of this other person because in order for them to get anything, they're having to take it from me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there's a limited amount.
Yeah,
out
we
there.
Got this interesting email a while back where this woman
this
woman, like, really wanted to be okay with polyamory, but the thing that she was having a hard time with is that she was, like, described that her partner's day is like a pie. And that, like,
and that's it. It's
like,
just, like, this limited
slice
amount
of the
time.
Pie is his romantic time.
Yeah.
And so if he has another partner, that means I'm getting half of that slice of pie. And, like,
right.
I want the whole slice of pie. And so it's that. It's this
I want
idea.
My pie and to eat it, too.
Exactly. It's this idea that, no, there's not enough to go around. And, of course, we're not making the claim that, you know, time is infinite because time is finite. But this idea that the love, the attention, the quality time, that there's not enough to go around, like, I'm having to sacrifice to someone else what should be mine.
Yeah.
So what are some bad examples of ways people think they can handle this that actually does more damage than good?
So, again, like, limiting the amount of time that they can spend with that partner, which is exactly what we're talking about. Saying, like, hey, like, if you're going out with this person, then I need to be going out with someone as well. Or we can only see people once a week, for example.
Yeah. I need 5 nights a week with
exactly.
you. Or, you know, this many. And I think people often conflate quality of time with quantity of time as well, for sure. Because, I mean, that was our response to that woman, is this idea of, like, really examining, like, well, what is actually the quality of time that you want, rather than confusing it with the quantity of time.
Yeah.
Because some people will be fine seeing you once a week if that's good quality time.
Yeah.
Right.
And some people won't be, you know? Like, people's needs for quality time are very different.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what was going on in her email, too, was tying commitment to time, to just spending downtime together. To her, that meant commitment.
Yeah.
And like, and I do think that for a lot of people, that does seem to be the case, right? Because we associate being in a committed relationship with moving toward living together.
Mm-hmm. Spending all of your free time together.
Yeah, all of your free time, that you're always the other's plus one to everything, that you're never like not around each other.
Yeah.
Like, if you need a night to yourself, it's like, oh shit, something's wrong. And I think that you know, a lot of the solutions people try to come up with, of like you said, of you can only go out with someone if I have a date the same night.
Sure.
I know a lot of couples that actually do that.
Definitely. Yeah.
Which will often end up being really difficult for whichever partner is the one who made that rule.
Yeah.
They'll be like, oh, I have a date Thursday. And then the other one's like scrambling
to try to find anybody to
go out with that night.
Yeah.
To be able to make that happen. So it can end up actually causing a lot more problems and a lot more hurt along the way.
Yeah.
I think another factor to this competition thing is a lot of people kind of try to make sure, like, my sense of security lies in making sure that I'm getting the most.
Yeah.
Or that I'm getting more than anyone else. Like, I don't mind sharing. I don't mind my partner having multiple partners, as long as I get the most time, the most attention, the most love.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, I mean,
that's a very like hierarchical
way of viewing things. It's a little bit of a product of Western culture, and I think also of American culture as well.
Okay. Why specifically?
Well, we're living in a very competitive culture.
Of course.
It's very much about, like, you got to carve out your space, you got to take what you can get, you know?
Right.
Like, and so I think that's something that kind of pushes those of us who grew up in those cultures towards this more sense of competitiveness, of that, like, okay, I know I'm okay as long as, like, I'm on top.
Sure.
I know I'm okay as long as I have secured my access to more than what somebody else has.
This is something that you talk about in your book.
Oh, do I?
Among all of these
there's
things.
So many things in that book.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now what are some good examples? I know we talked about the bad for a little while here.
Mm-hmm.
But what are some good examples? I feel like one that we hinted at a little bit is switching your focus to quality of time over quantity of time.
Yeah.
I know that this was something when Emily and I lived together. What we found was that it was really easy to be like, yeah, all our sort of time that we don't have other plans is together, which we would spend, like, watching Breaking Bad or Battlestar Galactica or, like, whatever we were into at the time.
But the quality of it wasn't, like, it wasn't a specific day set aside to go out on a date or get dressed up or have, like, an actual thing that we were going out to do. And therefore, it didn't feel as special.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's like, even though you're spending more of your time together, you still feel
jealous. Yeah, the quality didn't feel as much, as high.
And I think that the other part of it is not just quality, but intentional time.
Yeah.
And what we found is that if the way you structure your life, like, assuming that you have a partner that you live with or some kind of primary relationship like that, is that the assumption is, well, all my default time goes to them unless I make some other plans, whether it's hanging out with my buddies from work or if it's going out on a date.
Yeah.
But when the time you spend with that existing partner is just your, like, free time, your extra time, then any time you make a plan with somebody else, it has to take away from that.
Yeah, it can kind of have that feeling of, like, oh, you've taken away from this time that was technically, like, by default belonged to somebody.
And now if you imagine the contrast to that being, like, we've made plans for ourselves. We've also scheduled dates in addition to the other dates that we schedule with other people.
Yeah.
That's like, oh, so we know that this one night a week, in addition to our free time, which sure we're going to spend together, but we know we're going to have, like, a good chunk of time to, like, really be together and pretty ourselves up a bit, right? And, like, really, you know, be there and focus on that quality of the time.
Yeah, and focus
and
on each other.
And the intentionalness.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that made a big shift once I started realizing the importance of that.
Yeah.
And so, like,
still.
Right now, while Dedeker's living with me for a few months, like, we've started to be like, oh, shit, right. We have to do that now.
Yeah, we have to actually set aside time.
Our time. So it's not just...
Just a
filler.
Constant filler.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's one last thing I want to hit on with this competition thing, and actually, Jace's next blog post is going to be about this.
Uh-huh.
And I think it can be very important to examine, you know, if you're feeling competitive about something, figuring out, like, what's actually driving that desire to compete. Like, is it competition for competition's sake? Like, are you feeling competitive over something that you don't actually want?
Right. And actually, by the time this episode comes out, that blog post
out?
Will have
okay,
already
great.
Been out. So.
I have a personal example of this. When Jason and I were in Japan, we were staying in separate places. And, like, the next day we got together to, like, co-work. And he told me about how the night before he'd gone out to a club. He brought somebody home, like, had a good time, and then they parted ways. And, like, I had this weird competitive feeling. Not, like, that I was jealous of Jace, but I was competitive. Like, well, I want, like, fun, sexy post-club times, like, post-club hookups. Like I want to get that, too. And then literally, like, 2 minutes later, I was like, wait.
Do I really?
Wait. First of all, I hate going out to clubs.
Right.
So, like, for me to imagine myself going out to a club, meeting a random stranger, taking them home at 3 a.m., having some what's probably going to be less than satisfying sex, and then parting ways in the morning, I'm like, no, I don't actually want that. And then as soon as I realized that, I was like, oh, like, now I feel great.
That's
like,
awesome.
It was purely just competition for, like, competition's sake, which is so funny.
Yeah, and this is something that in that blog post I talk about, realizing a lot of different ways in my life that this has come around.
Yeah.
Even in terms of just the amount of sex that someone else has.
Yeah. To be fair, also, I was in the middle of, like, trying to finish my book manuscript, and my whole life was just, like, all work and no play.
Totally.
So. Sure.
Yeah.
I just wanted some.
But, just, like, even with the amount of sex that I found that I would be jealous of a partner getting what
more
I saw
sex
as,
with
like,
someone.
More sex, or they had sex at some point when I didn't. And then when I really finally, and it took a while, like, years, to finally step back and be like, wait a minute, actually, you know, I was doing other stuff. Like, I was actually preferring the video games I was playing or hanging out with my friends or whatever it was.
To the sex you weren't having.
Right. Yeah. I would, like, that it is this weird thing of, like, I think, especially for guys, you know, you're socialized that, like, you should be wanting sex all the time.
Yeah.
And so if you're ever not getting it, you're not doing a good enough job. You must not be happy. It's kind of like the stuff we talked about in our solo poly, single poly episode of, like, people tell you if you're not in a relationship, you must not be happy.
Yeah.
I feel like we tell guys, like, if you're not having sex this often, you know, as often as possible, then you must not really
you're
be happy.
You're not virile
or
and
something.
Yeah.
It's like, you know,
or,
I don't always need that.
Yeah, for sure.
And that was a big realization for me,
was
making that.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy, or anything you desire. Something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, MULTI, at AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
So,
fear.
This one's, fear.
Fear.
Fear's kind of undercuts comparison and competition, and a lot of what triggers jealousy is a lot of it boils down to fear, you know, because you know, these situations, you know, having to stay alone when your partner's out on a date or mm-hmm. seeing your partner get really excited about a new partner or, you know, knowing that your partner is off having some fantastic sex that you're not having, mm-hmm. you know, these...
The FOMO again.
The FOMO, yeah. FOMO. These speak to our deepest insecurities. They really cut down to these very universal fears, these fears of rejection, fears of being mm-hmm. alone, fears of being left out, fears of being unloved, fears of being inferior to somebody or being perceived as inferior to somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really, you know, fear is a freaking powerful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
And it really does not feel good. You know, we don't like feeling mm-hmm. afraid. And so this can cause any number of knee-jerk reactions when a partner does something that triggers our fear.
Yes. This one does, I would say, of all of these, tend to trigger the most of those kind of like impulse reactions.
Yeah.
Those outbursts of anger or blame or like trying to find something else because you don't want to accept how terrified you are.
Yeah,
because
you don't mm-hmm. want to feel afraid.
Because mm-hmm. you don't, yeah, you don't want to admit to yourself that you're afraid. Yeah. You're so desperate to fix this situation that it does. I feel like this one of all of them tends to... have the most of those kind of like flash in the pan kind of moments.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is like when people pull the ripcord.
Right.
Yeah, and say stuff like ultimatums.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
right.
I'm only going to stay with you exactly if you do X or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like demands of security saying like, we're not allowed to fall in love with anyone.
Yeah.
And that's how we're going to stay safe.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Yeah.
So what are some of these bad... ways that people try to
deal
with fear.
Promise me I'll always be the most important person in your life.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you know, some people can demand primary status.
Yes.
Right. Purely out of fear. Purely because I'm really afraid of someone mm-hmm. else getting the things that you would give to a primary. Mm-hmm. And it can become a panic thing. You know, some people will, because they're so afraid, they will panic and be like, okay, we got to close our relationship.
Sure.
Right now you got to break up with everybody you're seeing, and I'll break up with everyone I'm seeing, and then things will be great. And P.S. it's not going to be great.
Yeah.
Right. Or like on that episode of Compersion where he like makes her in front of him get on speakerphone and break up with the guy
super
that she's dating.
Up.
It's
so
like
bad.
So awful to watch. It's so painful to watch. But that's absolutely something that people will do in that kind of fear reaction.
But this is the thing, is like everyone gets afraid.
Sure.
Like human beings just get afraid. It's a good thing. It's what's helped us to evolve. It's what's helped our ancestors to avoid dying in many situations being afraid. So it's not like we want to become necessarily fearless
mm-hmm.
at all or like totally numb our emotions, but like how do you tackle this?
Heal them.
Yeah. So I want to be like a little bit Buddhist for a moment.
Okay. You know, I love Buddhism.
So something that in Shambhala specifically,
Sacred Path of the Warrior.
Yes. So in Shambhala, Sacred Path of the Warrior, fantastic book, highly recommend it. But talks a lot about the idea of fearlessness, and that fearlessness is not a feeling, it's not a lack of fear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not fearless because I don't have fear. I'm fearless because I'm willing to accept that fear and not have it control me or destroy me.
Yeah.
Right? That like the waves can crash against me, but I'm a rock who still stays there, who's not moved by that, who's not destroyed by fear.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've found a lot of comfort in that. Maybe it is a masculine thing, that it appeals to a certain like strength that I'm like, yeah, okay, I can relate to wanting to have that sort of a trait.
And
anyway, it's something
maybe
I found
in
really
the feminine end, it's nice to like have vulnerability to be able to be vulnerable enough to your partner that you're able to say, hey, I have these fears. These are what my fears are.
Right.
So allow me to work through them with you and understand that this is what's going on in my head when I'm having these fears and why I'm having them. Kind of delving back into like the reasons behind them. And often that's kind of the tapes that we play when we're children that keep coming up in patterns in our lives.
I think that actually is why that way of thinking about it really resonated for me as a more like masculine identifying person, is because a lot of guys feel like fearlessness means not being afraid of anything.
Sure.
And so the idea of admitting your fears to your partner is feels emasculating. It feels like, oh, well, I'm not a man. I'm not manly. Yeah. I'm weak then. Whereas this Shambhala way of looking at it, of like the true strength comes from having those fears, but still
and facing them.
Handling them, facing them. And so it for me, it was like a different framework to be able to present those fears to my partner.
Yeah, that's great.
And actually talk about them and work through them in a way that doesn't feel like, oh, that means that I'm weak.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I found is really powerful for men, especially.
Yeah.
I know the thing that I resonated the most with, and I cited this in my book, actually, but Dr. Lisa Rankin wrote this book called The Fear Cure.
Right.
Yeah, and I learned about it because I went and saw her speak, and it just blew my mind. Mm-hmm. But she wrote this entire book about... And the title is kind of deceptive because it's not about curing fear, but it's about using your fear to cure you, essentially.
I see.
You know, and it's like this idea that our fears kind of crack us open and let us actually see what it is that we need.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that in those moments that are so intense, you know, when you're having those emotional outbursts, or if you really want to you know, deliver an ultimatum to your partner, or if you're, you know, if you're pulling the ripcord, if you're in panic mode.
Right.
You know, that there is a power in that, but it doesn't have to be a power that's used destructively towards your partner or destructively towards your relationship or destructively towards yourself, but rather used to really illuminate and to really see like, okay, well, what is this deep nerve that it's touching and how can I heal that pain essentially? And that could be through talking it out with your partner. It could be going through therapy. It could be any number of like personal development, or it could be meditation. You know, it could be examining like your past and figuring out like, is there something I'm hanging on to from my childhood that's still here or from past relationships, you know? And sometimes I think I found what's really useful is sometimes being able to recognize baggage from past relationships and just be able to acknowledge it can be enough.
Oh, that's huge.
You don't even have to worry about, well, somehow I've got to cure this. Somehow I've got to get rid of this. But even just being aware of it is sometimes feels it's like 75% of the way there.
Mean, I like had a lot of things for when I first started dating Jace that I expected him to do. And I would kind of brace myself for them because I had been in like some emotionally abusive relationships.
Like you expected like negative reactions.
Exactly. And then when it didn't happen, I was like, holy shit, that's a trigger that I just expect. But... good human beings who don't do that to me are, it's just not going to happen then. And it was very interesting. That fear was kind of an unfounded one that just happened because I had had those experiences in the past with other people.
Yeah. And I think that, also having empathy and compassion for your metamors is something that I do want to touch on before we move on. 'Cause that's something that I found for me, with a lot of these different things, actually, this one has helped me. But where, you know, maybe my partner does feel like they're taking time away from me to spend it with somebody else for some certain occasion or because something's going on in their life. Or perhaps I have this fear of them caring about that person more than me or, you know, whatever it is. But often when I am able to take that step back and actually look at, wait a minute, like... I understand that like maybe this other partner's only in town for a little bit of time, or like this is the only time they could get off work, or this difficult thing is happening in their life or whatever it is, that taking that moment to be like, yeah, of course, like I would want to take care of that person too.
Yeah.
Is kind of having that opportunity to be like, I'm also part of helping and making things better for my metamor as opposed to like, well, it's something that my partner does that's separate from me.
Yeah.
I just have to suffer for it.
We're all on the same team.
Right.
Yeah.
Being on the same team.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So let's take it to our final one.
Yeah.
And the final trigger is loss of control. Mm-hmm. And this is very much wrapped up in fear, because I think that as human beings, we often fear losing control of our situations or losing control of our surroundings. And often where people come up against this in a non-monogamous relationship is having a lot of difficulty accepting that their partner is an independent human being and that they are going to make choices independently. That there's kind of this fear that, like, the more freedom and independence I give my partner, the more likely it is that they're not going to care for me.
Yeah.
Or that they're going to make choices that hurt me.
They're just going to go hog wild.
Exactly.
It's going to be insane.
And it's really tied up in our narrative about relationships.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
That we have to keep people under... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Under lock and key, and that they're not allowed to do anything outside of that relationship.
Or the idea that...
real human feelings.
Right, that a good relationship is not two individuals, but rather like one combined being.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like with terms like
bullshit.
My other half or my better half, or those sorts of things.
We've so romanticized that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or like
two souls becoming one.
Right. Or you complete me. Or like in the Bible, like they become one flesh.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's lots of different ways this is talked about that I actually think is very, very harmful to the way we approach other people, the way that we think that if they have any independence, it means that's somehow breaking. Like,
and I'm very possessive.
Yeah,
of another human.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So,
and so, you know, when people kind of feel like they're losing control, if they feel like their partners, if they're afraid that their partner is going to go hog wild, that, you know, people try to reestablish this control in some very unhealthy ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be things like prescriptive hierarchy.
Yeah.
Like,
which
as
I
long
think
as
we've
I,
been through.
Yeah,
specifically
as long
Dedeker,
as I make sure that, you know, all your other partners are secondary, then we're okay. It can be things like veto. It can be like restrictions. It can be things like controlling the information that your partner gives
don't
you.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, it could be either don't tell me anything or it could be you have to tell me everything.
Right. You every know, little intimate
yeah,
detail.
Yeah, so these are like the funny ways that people try to gain a sense of control again.
Yeah.
If they feel like the rug's been pulled out from underneath them.
I think also that rules, just in general, the rules people will make in their relationships tend to come from this.
Yeah.
This fear of loss of control. Because I think there is, I want to go back to this assumption of your partner going hog wild.
Sure.
You so eloquently said. Mm-hmm. But it's this weird idea we have that if I didn't have rules, or if there wasn't some external structure like monogamy or marriage, or, you know, whatever it is in your case, if there wasn't some external structure controlling my partner, that they wouldn't want to be with me.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of this insidious underlying assumption that's there.
Yeah.
But I totally bought into it for so
long. Oh, God.
Like, I remember
didn't we all?
No, and constantly being afraid that, like, somehow my partner was just, like, settling for me, and, like, there was really other people he wanted to be with, but he just kind of...
Right.
Like, I just kind of showed up at the right time in the right place. And
I remember once in high school, I had a teacher who somehow we got on the subject in class about relationships or whatever. And she was talking about how there was a guy that she was dating who, you know, would tell her those things like, I don't even see other women, or right. Or like I only have eyes for you, like those sorts of sentiments. Right. And that she was telling us that she was actually very frustrated about this, being like, no, like, I want you to look at them and see them and then still want to be with me.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't want to think you're only with me because
you have
blinders on.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember at the time, like, that was a pretty novel concept. I'd never considered that. And it actually, like, the more I've thought about it since then, I'm like, fuck, that is a lot of our romantic talk is based around this idea of I don't even see anyone else
as opposed to seeing them
and I still want to be with
you. But that's interesting, though, because that's actually what I've enjoyed about non-monogamous relationships is this idea that you could be with anybody that you wanted at any time.
But it's a choice.
And you're still choosing to be with me. It doesn't mean that you're still choosing to be with only me.
Right.
No.
But it's like you're still intentionally actively choosing the time that you want to spend with me. Like,
yeah.
Right.
That you're not here in this relationship because you're obligated to. You're here because you want to.
Because you made this commitment 10 years ago. And now
exactly.
You're like, fuck,
well,
stuck here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just the idea that, like, everybody, we give everyone choices, such as polyamory or, you know, whatever non-monogamous shape you want to take, and monogamy, and that everyone can choose which relationship structure they want for their life.
Mm-hmm.
That there's not just one option automatically and that's the only thing that's valid. And
right.
you're somehow not valid if you're doing anything else.
Right.
Yeah.
So the one last technique that I wanted to talk about as a good technique, I know some of it we've already gotten into here about, you know, really approaching, you know, what is this loss of control and understanding your partner is actively choosing to be with you.
Yeah.
Is Dedeker's pay it forward technique.
Mm-hmm.
TM.
Trademark payitforward.com. No, that's, I'm sure that's taken.
Oh, I'm sure.
Sure that's taken. Yeah. Right. So the idea with this one, if I can take over and present this one.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go hog wild.
That's what you're afraid of. I'll go hog wild if I have no rules. Mm-hmm. Is the idea that if you're feeling jealous or you are feeling insecure, that if you, instead of trying to grasp for control with that person, you know, that you're feeling like you're losing it, is to instead go out of your way to give extra attention or to say something kind or something sweet or something loving to somebody else or even to that person. Yeah. You know, whether it's another partner, it could just be a friend, it could be a family member, that anything, but just focusing on, I'm going to give good things to someone else without them asking, rather than focusing on what I'm not getting and how much that can change things. Do you want to talk more about how it's really...
No, I honestly, I don't understand why it works. Uh-huh. I don't understand how it works. Like, I've just known that it works. And I think that particularly when you're in the middle of, like, a jealousy crisis or a fear crisis where it's, like, you just feel icky and, like, all you want is to stop feeling this way right now, you know, like, maybe when your partner's out on a date or whatever, you know, and you're at home going crazy, that this technique of doing pay it forward, of just being like, you know what, I'm going to send a text message to my sister, just telling her how much I miss her and asking how her day was. Or I'm going to send a message to another partner, you know, maybe call them up and just see how their day was and tell them how much I love them. You know, that I've seen that to be the technique that goes the fastest from I feel like shit to actually I feel okay or even I feel good.
Right.
Is it just like stopping that continuous cycle in your head of like, I'm jealous.
Anything that can get you outside of yourself and onto another person, not just onto a thing, not just onto like a video game or a book or whatever, which, I mean, not that those are bad distractions, but something that puts you actively in this role of doing something for somebody else that's outside of you, I think helps to cut that cycle, that like negative feedback loop in your mind that's driving you crazy.
I think that there's also part of it that makes you realize that your world is bigger than just this one person or this one situation.
Because
I feel like with a lot of these, like with competition about the amount of time or, you know, comparison or fear, that a lot of times we get caught up in, even if we have other partners, this one that's triggering some jealousy for us, that's all we can think about is what we're not getting here, what we're not getting here, rather than realizing, actually, wait, I have a lot of amazing resources, whether it is friends or family or other partners, whatever it is, that there are other people that I get positive feelings from, that I can talk about my feelings with, that I can spend quality time with, that I can get a lot of these same things too. And I think the pay it forward also, in a way, helps remind you of that.
Can I be Buddhist?
Real quick, in
relation to this, this actually reminds me of the last time I was on retreat, a story that a Buddhist nun told me about the Buddha. That there's this parable that essentially that the Buddha asks somebody, like, so if I have an egg cup, like a tiny cup full of water, and if I pour a spoonful of salt into it, are you going to want to drink it?
No.
Like, no, it's going to be super fucking salty. Right. That direct quote from the Buddha.
No, but he said, won't.
But what if I pour a tablespoon of salt into the river? Like, would you drink water from the river?
Yes.
And, like, you probably still would. And so it's this idea of, like, if you learn to step back and kind of expand your awareness and expand your compassion, that it doesn't become so tight and hyper-focused on, like, all of the pain in this tiny little world that is you.
Right.
That as you start branching out and connecting to other people and kind of expanding your world, essentially, that... Yeah, over here, maybe it's a little bit uncomfortable, but in comparison to the rest of what my focus is, it's actually quite small.
Yeah.
So I think our overall takeaway from this is that if you're feeling jealousy or envy, whatever you want to call it, is to know that you're not failing.
No.
Right? It's like Emily was saying.
It's a universal emotion.
Exactly. We all feel it. Mm-hmm. It's something that we all go through all the time in our lives. And that just because you're feeling it in an emotional, you know, romantic or sexual way doesn't mean that's some failure or that it's somehow insurmountable. But that's just, it's just part of life. It's part of being a human being.
But it's the way in which you react to it.
And the way
in which you choose to combat it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And being able to see these triggers, you know, I'm sure there's many more triggers than just these four broad categories. But, you know, if you are able to kind of, you know, notice when you feel jealous and notice like, oh, something triggered it. And just to be able to step back and again, be out of just the thick of that emotion, yeah. you can kind of access some more clear-headedness in order to manage it, communicate it effectively, and deal with it in a much more healthy and constructive way.
Yeah. Awesome.
Sweet.
So we just recorded an hour-long episode.
Yeah. A page
Clearly,
and a half of notes.
We're still in our live show mode.
A little bit. But, yes. But we hope it helped. Yeah. We all out there.
Hope this was helpful for you. If you want to check out more of us, please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or Podcast Addict or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also check us out at multiamory.com. You can find us on Facebook, MultiAmory, on Twitter, on Instagram, MultiAmory Podcast, right? Like all over the place. Just type MultiAmory into Google and you'll find us. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to have you as part of our Patreon community if you want to contribute to helping us continue to do this show. But also just send us an email or tweet at us. We love interacting with you guys out there. You're the reason why we do this show and why we've kept doing it now for over 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
See you next week.
Bye.